This Audio Face episode is actually sponsored by Planes because the whole this is the week.
I know, on a Tuesday.
You're lucking out because if I start going in, that's just like a block of time I'm not here.
Yeah, and then on Tuesday I'll be like, oh shit, from work, I won't even shower, just like throw my bag down. I'm gonna pop my phone up, by the way, because you know I have a meeting at 12 every day or like 3 days a week. I'll just be playing it and I'll pop it up on Zoom and just be like, to do it. I have like my whole headset on and everything and just be like, what's up, flying.
I have one of those, Oliver's like teacher, he was talking about, he has kids who blatantly have like, phone is in the classroom, mm-hmm. and then they're playing Fortnite on the other, yeah. just blatantly looking on the other side.
Oh, you can, 100%. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I'm Sean.
I'm Dan.
This is episode 154. We have three albums for you guys that we're going to review. We have Crave by Giza. We have You Lost Your Mind Yet by Fantastic Negrito. And Bronson by Bronson. Deza and Golden features. Because they did pretty much every song, just about.
Bronson is like a dual collaboration between Odessa and Golden features.
Yeah.
So that is going to be, should be pretty interesting to hear and listen
yeah,
to.
Yeah, we have definite opinions and stuff.
Yes.
Also upcoming this week, before we get started, we have our Disclosure bonus episode since they're releasing their album this coming Friday. Two Fridays from now, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, we used to release them like the Thursday before, which I think is a good time to get before, but now we're giving people a little bit of ahead of time. Now you'll be able to get a heads up of when the album comes out.
I mean, pretty much the album's already, like, most of it's already out, so.
That's fair, but like, in general, we have a lot of other bonuses we'll be doing for these, so that's the idea.
Yeah.
Plus, you'll be able to, yeah, because so much of it's already out, you can listen to all the other Disclosure discography and get like a full sort of experience when that happens.
Go watch the W Hotel Boiler Room and have some acid while you're at it. It'll be an adventure.
We'll have a little bit of the video of that in the Disclosure bonus episode, which will also be on YouTube at youtube.audioface.show.
Hey, there we go. Do you want to do Power Report stuff, or we're just going to jump in it?
Yes, I can talk about myself again.
Yeah.
Sure, love to. Power Report, we're finally launching. It's the political podcast thing, which is good for the Audioface podcast feed because it'll be on its own thing, and then Audioface will be more Audioface. There's a ton of Audioface content coming up down the pipeline. I literally just have like episodes sitting on my hard drive
Pumping episodes
to be published.
Into the dead bodies.
Absolutely. Power Report, go to powerreport.world and you'll be able to go to this like page that will show all the different places you can subscribe to it. The first episode was with Kimberly Nicole Foster. I talked with her. She's the founder of For Harriet, which is this pretty big YouTube channel devoted to like the experiences and opinions of black women, and we talked about Kamala Harris and how much of a cop she is, and what we really are worried about her, but why we're just like, it's a lot of emotions, but I'm getting a lot of good feedback from it so far. I'm gonna launch it, the episode should go up it's semi-monthly is the perfect word for it, so like twice a month about. Make sure to look out for that. Mm-hmm. I'll have intermittent reminders about that. And the new episode is actually in the Audioface feed right now, but slowly within the next like episode or so or that, those will no longer be on the Audioface feed. They'll just be in the Power Report feed. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss anything.
Anyways, we're gonna jump into this a little bit of news.
No singles, just straight
news. Yeah, no singles, just three albums, and we'll go straight to news. So everybody loves WAP, you know, except one Ben Shapiro, so.
Yeah.
Mr. Shapiro, if you only understood the severity of what you said, you wouldn't have said it at all.
If you only understood how ridiculous what you said is, you wouldn't have said it.
So, WAP's, we reviewed it last week, it's crazy, the music video is hilarious.
Drove several conservative men crazy. We talked about one politician. I double checked. That's like a Torrance-ish area, not Orange County, from the district they're running around.
Okay.
But yeah, he freaked out about it. Ben Shapiro freaked out about it. I'm not going to spend more of my life talking about Ben Shapiro than I absolutely need to. But it went pretty
crazy. It's funny. So Cardi B decided to join OnlyFans, you know, CardiB.OnlyFans.show.
But
but it's not for what you think it is. No feet pics, Yeah. Not the standard e-girl craziness. She said that she's now doing it to release behind-the-scenes content and address ongoing rumors, share glimpses into her personal life, and connect closer with her fans and much, much more. And she deadass said, "No, I will not be showing pussy, titties, and ass." So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, if you're really looking for that from Cardi B, the music video is freely available. And
Pretty much.
I think this is, like, you know, a lot of artists are trying to figure out how to better connect and honestly, like, make money from their fans during this time. And in this case, the OnlyFans is not too different from, like, a Patreon or anything like that. So I have absolutely no, like, qualms whatsoever. I just think it's kind of funny.
Right.
And a nice, like, sort of view. She's really smart, and, like, her team and her are really adept at, like, marketing. They're really good. And then also Cardi B spoke out about, like, saying she had spoken with Joe Biden and is basically saying, like, she's in the crowd of, like, yes, you obviously know I was riding with Bernie, but, like, shit's too real.
She's salty is what she says. She says, "I'm salty, but I'm okay."
Yes.
We're in the same boat.
Yeah. She said, "What I'm saying is that I know him. I've always felt like Biden balanced Obama because I thought he was conservative, and that's what swayed the conservative votes, the one in the middle. Knowing him and everything."
Holy shit, she's so much more woke than anybody on CNN.
Knowing him and Cardi B for Power Report. Knowing him and everything, I think he's getting it, and I think he understands the people's pain. He's getting what we want. People think we want so much, but we really want simple things if you really think about it. And this is, like, kind of trying to get the most unifying message of Donald Trump has, there's so much politics in this episode, I'll keep it minimum, but he's created such stark differences in the choices between the parties. It's still very much two sides of the same coin when you dig between the surface, but there is so much of a stark difference, even at the surface now, that it's perfectly understandable that people are saying that. Even, again, Cardi B, very outspoken for Bernie Sanders and progressive issues, and is not one to say, like, "Oh no, I would take back everything I said. Biden's great." Right. She's like, begrudgingly,
haven't got a choice, but this is the stuff that I want him to implement and all this stuff. So it's one way that you can do better. Like, she's trying to do her best part in that regard, which, you know, fair play.
And that is the kind of, like, situation that we talked about on Power Report, which with Kimberly Nicole Foster, which is just the idea of settling for Biden, I guess we could say. And from, like, a super nuanced conversation about that, definitely check that out. That's good.
So anyways, we're going into first album. We have Crave by Kieza. It is 9 songs, 32 minutes long. It's her first album in 6 years or so, because she released an album in 2014 called Sound of a Woman. Some of you will recognize Hideaway. I actually first heard her music from, I believe, Little Boots did a DJ set in Mixmag 5-6 years ago and had Hideaway on it. And then I saw her album because I really liked it, because it's there's a song, So Deep, which is the fourth track on there. And that's more like your UK garage house mixes and stuff. So that was in there in that album. And I really liked that style of music. Especially started to become popular in 2014 around that time. More of the garage stuff was kind of coming out.
Yeah, like deeper house pop kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hideaway, I think maybe it was that same Mixmag thing, but I remember, like, going to, like, a cheap sort of, like, silent disco in college and hearing that song sort of, like, as one of the beginning drops of it. And it was, like, at night, and one of those super, like, magical college experience things. That was nice. And it threw down. Kieza is definitely capable of a couple bangers, but it's not always been super consistent to me.
Yeah.
And so going into this drop, sort of, it feels complete enough to be an album.
I think it's complete enough to be an album.
And it's also been a very long time since she's released.
Yeah.
So I think we can call this an album, even though 32 minutes is definitely on the very, very short side. But yeah, I was looking for, like, does it have any sort of consistency? Can it be, like, consistently good? And I didn't really find that personally.
No. Like, the first song I actually, like, wrote Renegade, it sounded like a dystopian pop, so kind of like a mix between Lady Gaga and Billie Eilish, I would say, for that first song, where it's like looking inward, just saying, hey, I'm this beautiful person, I don't need to change for anybody or whatnot. Her vocals are fantastic in it. I think one thing that's shown throughout this album is how powerful her vocals are. Because her first album, you could see it a bit, but it was more of the production quality of it and stuff, which I liked a lot more. And then this one, her vocals are shown out more, but I think the production took a side note in it because I had some issues with it. But the first song I thought started on a strong note. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
It's that kind of like dystopian pop, which I do enjoy. I like it. I think it's a good direction to go for that if you wanted to do a pop album like that. And I'm like, okay, so she started to venture out from that. The second song, All of These Feelings, I didn't like at all because, you know, what was my favorite thing on earth? Snap clap. So then it started off with a snap clap. I'm like, ah, god damn it. Okay. And then that was just kind of your cheesy, I want to say super cheesy, but like your run-of-the-mill pop song style where it's just, okay, it's nothing too crazy. Again, the vocals are fantastic. I really like the lyrics, but the production of it just, it was too distracting because the production was so crap compared to her vocals and the lyrics in it. So that's one thing that if it upstands each other, then it can be just as good. And I like, there's a couple other songs I do like. When Boys Cry, I think, is really good because that's looking into like ripping apart the male ego. Cleo's saying like other people have emotions and stuff too in there, and I like that it's a little bit slower in that. And then the last, before that you have Crave, Can't Be Saved, Love Me With Your Lie, and those are okay songs. I think again the production took a step backwards from her first album. Her vocals are more prevalent in it, but it's more of like kind of a generic-ish EDM pop style once it gets there. Because the problem to me is like it started on with Run Renegade, it started very strong. I'm like, oh shit, okay, this maybe it'll be kind of like what Lady Gaga's album was earlier this year, and I might really like it. And it didn't hit for that. The last two songs were actually pretty solid with Love Never Dies and Dance With Your Best Friend. Because
Love Never Dies is my favorite.
Yeah, that's going to be my favorite on the album too.
I feel like Love Never Dance, I would say Love Never Dies is a really kind of passionate song. It shows like, I think some aspects of Chiesa are just like very typical love tropes in music. We talk about that all the time. I think we can always go deeper in music, blah, blah, blah. Welcome to Audio Face Podcast. Anyways, but
my main thing, I love the drums in it because it's a big kicking drum in it, and then like it slowly builds up through that song because it's a longer song on the album, and it, like by the end of it, just like the has a powerful climax into the song. It's very good. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
So that's why like there's three songs in here that I thought were very good. The first one and the last two, I thought if she made more of that into an album, I think it would have been very, very well done. The rest, the kind of that chunk in the middle, minus When Boys Cry, was just really bland to me. So there's still some good stuff that she's making. I think some people are going to have a lot of fun like remixing and stuff, because that's, again, that's how I heard some of her stuff. Because you could definitely put like Love Never Dies or Dance With Your Best Friend. You can put those in mixes and stuff and mess around with it. Like I could see Scream doing that in a DJ set. I hope he does, because that would be dope.
This is definitely ripe for any number of electronic artists to make use of these really good vocals. Because that's another issue in electronic music, is that the vocals are oftentimes lacking or really generic. Definitely not Kiss's problem at all. But this will definitely benefit from some tighter production, some more imaginative production, some more adventurous production especially. And so that's an excellent point there, Sean. I can't wait for the electronic remix community to really get their hands on
this. Yeah, because to me, I wouldn't say it's too much of a letdown, but I think because I like the sound of a woman so much, because I like that specific sound a lot. It's my favorite because I like deep house, I like garage, there's a lot of that style I like, and I think I was going into it, I expected that a little bit more, but I understand you stray away from it because it is very niche, and it did have like popularity around that time because Settle came out, and you have some of that in Settle as well from Disclosure, but it's nothing like too wild within it. So anyways, so our arbitrary scale this episode is vice presidential picks, because you know young Kamala Harris is a cop. He got that nomination.
Yeah,
and vice president. So.
I even said in the audio face cold open, so I sort of trapped myself last week that potential vice presidential picks would be a great arbitrary scale. I actually went with like historical ones, but I think I'm gonna also do it in like the people who are gonna be in the race itself for the 2020 like Biden thing, because there are a bunch of people who are like in the ballpark. I remember Susan Rice was one. She had a lot of qualities that were gonna work out really well for her, but otherwise didn't have enough strength on her own, like abilities or experience as an executive in the presidential stage. Mm-hmm. So like she had a lot of good qualities, but couldn't quite stand on her own. But maybe with like a good surrounding network would be great. Like I could see Susan Rice for a cabinet position, but not heartbeat away from the president. I also can't see Kamala Harris in that either, but nevertheless.
So who's your, is that Susan Rice? Would that
yes.
be yours? Susan Rice? Okay. Mine is going to be, let's see. Damn, there's a lot I can do. It's going to be solid Bob Doyle.
Bob Dole?
Oh, Bob, yeah, but I like to call him Bob Doyle.
Oh, God.
Because, you know, as vice president from Gerald Ford, that no one ever remembers, because Gerald Ford was president for, like, barely right after Nixon, you know, after Nixon got ousted out. That was a solid Bob Dole, where it's like, you know, does nothing wrong, isn't anything spectacular, but, you know, solid. And that's it.
That works.
You know. All right. So.
Next one. We have The Weeknd did this interesting thing. We've talked about post-COVID concerts, and that's been a kind of theme throughout Audio Face. This latest one was a long-standing project between The Weeknd and TikTok, and I'm gonna totally not touch the politics thing here because I'm tired. But basically, obviously it wasn't live. A lot of it was like computer-generated and
so it's augmented reality.
There was some limited interaction with TikTok, because TikTok Live basically works like Periscope does, or any of like Instagram Live, essentially. There's live streaming where the screen is this way, and there's live streaming where the screen is this way, right? Yeah. And there's no other real difference between all the other services, just like the communities. But it seems really good. He premiered a new song with Doja Cat, and it was 20 minutes. I couldn't find it able to be played anywhere else except like TikTok, and even within TikTok. It's such a platform that takes the scrolling away from you. It's just like, here's the content. You don't really navigate through the app that much unless you're really trying. So it wasn't immediately apparent how to like rewatch it. But I did see clips of it. It was really good. I happen to know some people who worked at TikTok who worked on this project, and it was a big lift. So it turned out really nice and cool. And it's another like similar in the vein of Fortnite and Travis Scott.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's what it reminded me of in that regard. But it still keeps with The Weeknd's damn good year.
Yeah.
Because everything he's been on this year, I think he's knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, which I'm surprised.
Which I'm genuinely shocked about, because we're both like, you know, this is America's fuckboy. And we like, he's my guilty pleasure, because there's some of his songs I do like, and there's some of his songs I absolutely hate. But his past album was like, holy crap. And this year, all his features too, I'm like, wow, he's actually done a really good job.
Yeah, I absolutely was ready to shit on The Weeknd this year, but
he's screwed me wrong, too. So. But you know, we always say that. We're honest, fair, balanced, and unafraid.
Someone's got to be. Okay, next.
So, Beck, you know, everybody's favorite non-Scientologist now, apparently, so, you know. We got that wrong, apparently, or whatever.
I'm retired.
He teamed up with NASA for the visual album of Hyperspace. So I guess it's going to be like a whole AI kind of experience thing within hyperspace, which came out last year, correct?
It's using basically data from NASA's space exploration and missions to create these sort of automated visuals. All these visuals.
Yeah, so it'll be like it'll be like planets, nebula, like other random stuff like in that regard.
A little bit, yes, but to me, they almost look like macOS 10 before they started like getting really crazy with the names, like back when they named them after like cats instead of places
leopard.
Back when it was like leopard before like Monterey Bay Heights or whatever.
Oh, yeah, whatever they call it now.
But like they're basically like kind of screensavers. They're visuals. They're just like kind of trippy things, but they look really nice. It kind of evokes the number of times alternative artists have played with technology besides cameras to make their music videos and visuals, like the House of Cards video for Radiohead, where that was filmed using cameras that like were just detecting, they're shooting points of light onto things and then making data off of that as opposed to a traditional camera. It's really cool. It's really rad. If you're gonna like,
if you like a lot of AI stuff or a lot of things that, if you like a lot of visual effects, I think you will enjoy it.
Or a lot of drugs.
There's that too. Because we both like hyperspace, so that's a decent album.
Yeah, it's a really good album from last year, I believe.
Yeah.
Next, we have Fantastic Negrito's Have You Lost Your Mind Yet? It is a pretty interestingly sized album from an interestingly sounding artist. It's 11 songs long, 38 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And he has sort of like a soul funk sort of sound that he's generally sort of done. A pretty decently done discography too, I think spanning past at least the early 2010s. But Have You Lost Your Mind Yet? It's a pretty like decent way to jump into his album. I felt like with this project, I've heard a little bit of him before, but this is like probably the first or second time I've really paid a lot of attention to him. After more listens, it's one of those where you listen to the album more and it gets better.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's not like my cup of tea usually, this style of music, but I did enjoy it. Like Chocolate Samurai was a good opening track within it. When it bombs off, are you ready? The big thing with the album to me is that there's a lot of different features on it, so there's a lot of different sounds and different things that go on, because you have a lot of soul in it, you have a lot of like funk that goes into it, you have a little bit of hip-hop that goes into it as well, and then there's some experimentation. You have songs, I believe it was like These Are My Friends or All Up in My Space, I can't remember which one. That like throws electronic twist into some of his music. So there's a lot of stuff going on in that, but I like that because to me, I thought when I first listened to the song, I'm like, okay, I don't want it to be just stagnant into that one thing, but I like that all the features and stuff on that had their own little says into it, but it kept it cohesive in a regard. So it's interesting, actually. I want to listen to it a little bit more and try to get into it. I listened to it twice through because the first listen, I had no idea what I was getting into. And I was like, okay, I got to make sure I want to listen to it again because it was more of, first listen's more absorbing it a lot because it's quite eclectic, at least for my taste. And then the second time, I'm like, okay, I can get into this a little bit more. There's some stuff that is solid in here.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. I didn't mention this in the Chiesa review, but I did the reverse Sean way of listening to things. Shuffled first by accident. That's always like never what I intend to do. Okay. But I shuffled first by accident, and I had the experience of like, oh, well, this is meh. I got to try to listen to it in order now and see if it's any better. And I had my opinions on that earlier. But this one I heard through kind of all the way through twice. And I had a markedly different experience my first time listening to it than my second time listening to it.
For sure.
My first time, it was very much like Yeah, you are maybe at most critical trying to follow this difficult to follow thing that's going a lot of different places. But of the albums that do push these boundaries in a lot of way, while still trying to stay in a pretty classical soul and funk mm-hmm. kind of ethos, it does it pretty well. Like, there's no point where I'm like, I hate how this sounds.
No, not at all.
It's a little bit like funky and weird and doesn't fit in a lot of like settings per se, but it's not
and it doesn't feel dated at all.
That's very true.
That was my big worry in the first opening song, Chocolate Samurai. I'm like, okay, you can do this a couple of different ways. You can make it like expand upon the sound and try different things, which I really haven't heard before if anyone does it, or you can just make it like a throwback 70s, 80s album. But it was the latter, because he experimented a lot on it, and it was very good in that regard. So I like it.
Yeah.
It's very different.
I found there are a couple songs in the middle with features. There was Searching for Captain
Save
with E-40,
which is hilarious. I saw E-40, I'm like, that's super random, but okay. Ganged up, never lamed up, and I ain't never been no peanut. When I'm moving around, am I reaching? I keep a thumping when I go rehab. I try to teach and preach to these suckers to stop doing that whole shit. But they hella hard-headed and stubborn, and they gonna wind up in some more shit. He calling himself a P, but he's a simp. A simp? Partner, you too polite, you gonna get pimped. If you heavy in the game, you can't be light. You can't turn a hoe into a housewife. A housewife. E40's still chopping it up out there a little bit. I haven't heard E40 in a minute, so.
And then there's Your Sex is Overrated with Masa Kohana. I think the style of the song is pretty good, mm-hmm. but there are some times where I think Fantastic Negrito's lyrics almost get into that like realm of music where you're so kind of on the nose with the message that it's like, at least for me, where I like a little bit of abstraction in the song that could even be about the exact same thing, it seems like, oh, the message is very much clear and like right here. It happens certain times like through like the Justice in America like interlude, mm-hmm. and I think there's like a little interlude in the beginning too. But yeah, there are some like definitely really rad songs in here. I think the second song on here, I'm So Happy I Cry, is also just like a really fun like ballad sort of thing. And it gives the beginning of the album, like, it gives you that buy-in where you feel, okay, I'm fine a little bit.
You can hop in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's overall not bad. I'm going to give this an Al Gore.
You're going to give it Al Gore?
Yeah.
I was thinking Al Gore. Let's see, who do I want to give this to?
I have another good one if you like want to find a friend.
No, I've got it. This is Hubert Humphrey.
Hubert Humphrey?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
From LBJ.
Lord Jesus, yeah. Senator Hubert Humphrey.
Yep.
His big claim to fame. I totally don't remember
anything about him. I don't remember.
You're just like pointing, just like that. It sounds like a good one.
Oh yeah, because I like doing administrations during in the 60s and 70s, because you know shit goes down. All those administrations.
Yes, soul and funk. Also, I guess in those administrations.
It's not Spiro, whoever Nixon's vice president was. I think Spiro or something like that. Because they were like purposefully trying to get rid of that shit. And the USPS.
Yeah, Spiro Agnew.
Spiro Agnew, there we go, yep.
Oh, Lord. There's some people...
Henry Kissinger and Spiro Agnew were in that White House.
There's sometimes when you have names where it's just like, why do you have power? Why are we letting you have power? We should not.
So the lawsuit against the Zo that started about late last year over Truth Hurts, the royalties between the songwriters Justin and Jeremiah Raisin against the Zo. Apparently they were dismissed by a California court.
District judge,
yeah. So that's interesting, because we talked about it before when they popped on there. They're saying that they wanted royalties for the lyrics part of it and everything, because they accused Lizzo of plagiarizing it.
Yeah, the lyrics were pretty similar. The melody was very, very similar. Mm-hmm. But the ultimate argument ruled by District Judge Dolly M.G. says that, quote, a joint author of one copyrightable work does not automatically gain ownership of a derivative work. So basically they, and it was ruled in court that the songs weren't similar enough for having worked on one to like justify having the rights to another. Which I guess it's a fine line because we have, there are always those arguments in courts all the time of how similar is this song and based on what, but.
The Vanilla Ice Award, as we always like to, as we award every year.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't look like the Ryzens are getting their money in that case. I guess it's just, get good lawyers.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've already had one, a few, like we've had a couple of these instances this, this past year, but that one was the one that was probably the closest for it. I mean, shit, J. Cole should sue YG, so.
Yeah, that is...
That one is just, that one is the worst by far, not even close. All right, so Taylor Swift is on a, maybe we should get her for the political report. So she ranted against Trump's dismantling of the United States Postal Service, which I talked about in our last episode of Political Report, RIP. So she had, her statement is, Trump's calculated dismantling of the USPS proves one thing, clearly. He is well aware that we do not want him as our president. He's chosen to blatantly cheat and put millions of Americans' lives at risk in an effort to hold on to power, which...
It's not really hyperbole. It's the USPS, the postal workers have been reporting that the new directive from the Trump-appointed Postmaster General is to cut costs in ways that mean that mail piles up at the sorting facilities and mail doesn't go out to people when it's there. Usually the Postal Service has a policy of whatever mail they get, you like... hand it off, and that's when you end your day, is like when your stack of mail is done. And yes. So that's why postal workers will still be out till like 8 or 9 p.m. just finishing their stack or whatever. They're really dedicated people, and they should be paid a lot more. And by the way, they're not really part of the U.S. government.
And people don't realize that.
But they're held by the balls of the U.S. government. And in that glorious last episode of Power Report, we did talk about that. But basically, and in the new episode of Power Report, there is, with Kimberly Nicole Foster, we did talk a little bit about the Postal Service and how the combined nature of COVID and how difficult it's going to be with voting because of that, with how difficult it's going to be with voting because of the Postal Service and voting by mail. Just vote like as soon as possible, even if it means voting early, just to give it time because this is...
But I mean, I got my passport in 4.5 weeks and my passport card in 5 weeks. So, you know, they did something right.
Postal Service fucking works, dude. Just...
I know. And I went there to do all my shit. So, yeah, you know, shit bastards. Works. Also, what the hell? Taylor's over here just making good points now. So, you know.
Yeah. All of a sudden, we're in a decade later and Taylor Swift is the woke one and Kanye West is the maniac.
2020.
We report, we decide.
last time review, we have Bronson by Bronson. So it's Odessa and Golden Features. Those are the two that make up Bronson.
Two pretty pretty notable figures in the
EDM world,
2010s electronic music scene. It's kind of sad. Like it seems like 2010 EDM, like it had a moment around 2013. It seems like it would be a thing, and just like been flat.
It's like it started up at like 2013, 2014, and then around like because when we went to Hard Summer in 2014, I was like, holy shit, this is actually picking up steam, and then it just kind of went
flatline. Yeah. And now with the death of like concerts and festivals, I think
it's just
like,
oh yeah, it's now going back to being an underground thing. So
fuck yes,
which I'm down for because you know we're hipsters in the heart when it comes to electronic music. Because side rant, when electronic music started to become really popular and festivals are starting getting bigger, you have EDC just becoming a giant thing. I remember when EDC was in the Rose Bowl and people were getting sued and Deadmau5 was like, I think I saw 45 people just pass out one time in like 2007, 2006.
It was really unregulated. People were like super like drugging out.
Yeah, it was really low key and people were there more for the music part per se. Like yes. That's when you go to underground house music stuff, whatever, and now it's become this thing where it just people go for like the festival part, and the music just became super stagnant, which sucks. So it's for better / for worse in that regard if it starts to get more underground. So anyways, moving on to the music part of this, Bronson, there's some stuff in this I like, there's some stuff in this I don't like.
What did you expect going into this?
I thought it was going to be more hypey-typey.
Yeah, I definitely thought this was going to be worse.
And I thought, like, when I saw Odessa and Golden Features, I'm like, okay, this is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to go, like Red Album Deadmau5 style, which is the EDM I like a lot, or it's going to go Dylan Francis, like, cats are exploding and shitting out rainbows, the craziness. And it definitely did the latter, where I went to like kind of the more chiller style, early 2010s of EDM, where Foundation starts out where it's kind of this instrumental piece that gets you into starting the album. It's about 3 minutes long. It's kind of like a little build thing. It's nothing like spectacular, but it gets you set for it. And then Heart Attack featuring Laura, L-A-U period R-A.
Dot is, Sean, get millennial.
All right, whatever. Dot com era. It's
dot com bubble.
Sorry. Ooh, yummy. Yeah, short that shit, baby.
Yummy for my tummy.
It starts off and it sounds like it's building and building and building. I'm like, oh, here it comes. It's gonna be a stupid like hyphy typhy drop, and it doesn't. It goes into more of a chill level thing, and it's. His love's a heart attack. That song I actually really, really liked. I was shocked by it because the vocals were really good. It sounded like he has a vocals almost where it's more prevalent, but the production was very, very good. And it didn't do anything that was cliche within EDM, which has been happening a lot, but it's more of that chiller wave. And what it reminded me of a lot was Zoo. It reminded me a lot of Ringo's Desert, mainly part one other than part two, but there's a couple of songs on Ringo's Desert, part one. I listen to it, I go, oh yeah, I could definitely, this sounds like Zoo in a very good way, just more vocals.
In a complimentary way, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Zoo is like on a pedestal.
Yeah, I feel so, there are parts of this album that felt like definitely callbacks to different earlier eras of electronic music, even pre-2010, like, rave renaissance era.
Like, you go like Faxing Berlin era, like 2007-ish.
Oh, I can even do a step earlier. Vault's the song that's a little bit further down past a pretty decent song, Blind, and decent feature with Gallant. Mm. But Vault sounds like straight like 2002 Paul Oakenfold.
Techno, like straight tech.
And it's all in the drums. It's like that, like sort of pre-industrial, like again used sort of as a 4/4 standard beat, not experimental industrial as you have today, but like the industrial sort of clangy, fast-paced sort of sound feels like you're in a car chase.
Like it's like Amelia Lynn style, like that young Belgian Dan, that young shut up, Bam. Belgian techno style, which I like a lot.
Yeah.
It honestly shocked me every song going into it. I was waiting to get disappointed and whatnot, but there's a couple songs that could have stood out, but it wasn't anything spectacular, but it was very solid, a lot better than I thought. Because this is the last album I listened to this week. Because I saw, like, was the first one, because I'm like, okay, let me see what happens. I was kind of let down a little bit by that. Fantastic Negrito, I'm like, okay, let me see. I have no idea who he is. I mean, listen to it, no idea going into it. Did end up enjoying it. And Bronson, like, all right, fine, let me get this over with. I go, oh shit, this is actually really good. This might be my favorite one of the week. So I was genuinely surprised. I like the last two songs a lot. Keep Moving and Dawn featuring Totally Enormous Extinct Dinosaurs, which I just love that name. It sounds like a random card you'd have in a Exploding Kittens, if you know that card game.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic. I think it's actually a pretty solid album and a really good feature album in that regard. So, solid.
Loving it. The end part, like you're talking about, especially around Keep Moving and shit, is a really nice, solid ending to it. A nice piece put together. Like you said, it's 10 songs, 39 minutes long. I don't know if we even did the specs in the beginning, but it's a passive experience. It not a lot of electronic projects really get to this level of feeling complete and solid. Nightlit's complete as in it's telling a full story, but it's a good collection of songs that plays through well together. I can pick most of these apart, and even the songs I don't love on these are the don't stick out the most, I think are decent callbacks to subgenres or good attempts to where, like, yeah, I'd be super down for a future B2B with Odessa and Golden Features as Bronson, because this was
that would
a really
be pretty
solid
sick.
Effort.
Yeah.
This is a really solid effort. I'd like to see what they do and what they experiment with, especially in a live set.
For sure.
Yeah. This could be a very to cap a really interesting conversation we've had around this album, this could be a really interesting sort of beginning new renaissance point for EDM because of COVID and everything. We sort of got ahead of the game and we said that like indie would be the next interesting point, and now like a year and a half later, just everything's blossoming. So I'm just gonna like wishfully place that thought into the air.
Because we were right with indie, so let's be right with EDM. Like, please get back to like the golden age.
Yeah, I want to be golden features. I want to be right less because of bragging rights, but more because of my ears.
Right.
Arbitrary scale.
This is a solid Harry S. Truman.
Wow.
It's a solid, like, you know, you got to be bog standard American right after one of the greatest presidents ever, FDR. After he dies, you're like, we're going to nuke everything. And after that, we're going to bomb Korea a lot. And then we're going to make the Truman Act, which starts like four wars after that. So, you know, why not?
Keep moving.
Keep moving. Stay hard.
Just do it. I'm going to give this a... I mean, if we're going in that direction, Dan Quayle.
Dan Quayle, all right.
Yeah, just a little... he's just a guy. He's just a dude. He's from suburbs of Arizona. He's a nice guy. Not nice, weird. No.
Nice guy.
No... No interesting political scandals or potential issues with his background whatsoever.
You know, sounds like a nice guy, right? I would shake hands with him.
His handshake, it's limp.
Oh, Lord. I would always like to end Audio Face on a wild note, as I like to say. I was going to say fun note, but, you know, like a wild note. So R. Kelly, you know, our favorite... should be in jail getting, you know, I'm not gonna say that. Yes, getting smoked, as we say in the military. His manager was charged with threatening to shoot up a movie screening.
Yeah, so this is
threatening to Colorado Dark Knight Rises 2012.
Yeah, but instead of like, I'm not gonna get too much into the psychology of that because it's like warped and whatever. But instead of doing it because you're like. Emulating some villain figure, or at least that's the fake narrative they tried to put on that.
Yes.
This is to stop a screening of the R. Kelly documentary, Surviving R. Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And this was done by one of his publicists, too, because in his mind, this would direct attention away from the disaster that is Surviving R. Kelly. Yeah, this happened in 2018, by the way. So this is a while ago, of course, this is when the documentary was coming out, but the charges are just happening now.
Yeah.
This is late 2018. And yeah, he tried multiple times to get the events canceled. He turned to threats, saying that an armed individual would open fire at the screening, and at that point it was canceled. So that seems like some pretty interesting far lengths to go to protect your boy, R. Kelly, who is... pretty credibly accused of grooming women, sexually assaulting women, preventing them from leaving and basically controlling their lives. But...
And, you know, some more associates were charged. They were intimidating and bribing alleged victims. And one was accused of setting a fire to a car in, you know, the great state of Florida.
So, you know, just a little bit of theater shootings here, a couple of car bombs there, just some classic typical stuff you do when you're PR for R. Kelly.
You know, that's what happens when you're an innocent man. You know, you just set fire to a country real quick just to say, I am innocent. I'm going to blow this up and hide this. And you can't go to the screening that shows these things because you're not allowed to.
When I see a burning Chevy Chevette on the streets of Miami, all I think of is R. Kelly fighting for his life.
When I see a like an old school Pontiac that's just like completely lit, a beige Pontiac with like white wheels that's just absolutely on fire, all I think is, damn, R. Kelly needs to stay in jail, dude. Every time.
I'm fighting for my life. Oh my God, what is
that? I forgot about
what a
that.
Loser. Okay.
What a loser. Could get smoked.
This has been Audio Face. Great job. Awesome show, great job.
Awesome show. What does it mean to play us out? What does it mean? Please give us an Audio Face. Please subscribe, follow us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and all the social medias. You can follow me at SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow Dan at Dan from the Web at Dan from the Web on Twitter, Dan from the Dan from the Internet on Instagram. I want to say Dan from the Instagram. new tag. Dan.OnlyFans. Follow us on YouTube at youtube.audioface.show, where we've been posting lots of clips, and please comment because that shit is hilarious to us and it makes my week sometimes. I just want to tell all those people, you don't listen to Psychedelic First, listen to that review, you assholes. Thanks for listening to us. Subscribe, rate us, all that fun stuff, and we'll see you next week. Also, disclosure bonus episode on Thursday, so please be on the lookout for that. And ta-ta for now.
Cheers.
Bye.